You are tuned in to We Are Queer on WERU Community Radio Station 89.9 FM in Blue Hill, Maine. We Are Queer highlights the touching experiences for Maine's diverse LGBTQ+ community. From coming out stories to exploring new chapters, WERQ is a voice to the queer people of Maine, building empathy and understanding in our greater community. I'm your host, Olivia Peruke, and I use she, her pronouns. This week, I am interviewing Maggie Hirschland, who is the Youth Engagement Coordinator at Out Maine. This interview was through an online recording, and it also is an introduction to the organization. In this episode, we specifically touch on the landscape of queer youth in Maine, resources for queer youth, and the special Rainbow Ball put on by Out Maine.
Hi, everyone. I'm Maggie Hirschland. I use she and they pronouns. I'm the Youth Engagement Coordinator at Out Maine. And I moved up to Maine 4 years ago, originally for an AmeriCorps position actually at Rockland Main Street. And since then, I've had a variety of different positions in, you know, youth engagement at the after-school program, as well as community engagement opportunities and working with the Camden International Film Festival as well. So I've been really lucky to be able to be really grounded here in Rockland and as well as in the Mid-Coast through those positions, and then with Out Maine working statewide with queer youth. So I'm excited to talk more about my role in the organization of Out Maine and what we work with here in Maine.
I was wondering if you might be willing to speak more about Out Maine and the organization, and kind of what is Out Maine for people who might not know?
Yeah, so Out Maine is a nonprofit that was originally founded in 1996, and the mission is to create more affirming and welcoming communities for all of Maine's diverse LGBTQ+ youth and allies. We define youth as anyone 22 and under, so we have a really broad range of youth we work with. And in addition to doing direct programs for youth, we also do a bunch of family programs, parent supports, working wider in the community and with educators, healthcare providers, and more. And I'd be happy to talk a little bit more specifically about all of those different programs and opportunities we do. But overall, our goal is to create more affirming, welcoming, safe communities for queer youth in Maine.
Well, it sounds like a really important organization here. I know Maine is a generally pretty rural state. Mm-hmm. So I think like finding those connections and places is really important. So if anyone doesn't know about Maine, it's definitely, I'm glad that they're listening and tuning in today. And I was just really curious, I think, you know, for some people, I've talked to a lot of people on the show who are older in population versus younger people. And I'm just really curious to maybe get an insight into the queer youth perspective here in Maine.
Yeah, that's a great kind of point. I think there's the opportunities for youth to kind of engage in more like public spheres or like the intergenerational connection, I think, is so important. And I think there aren't that many places where we're able to have, you know, older queers and also younger LGBTQ+ youth individuals connect. So I feel really lucky in my job. I get to do that almost every day. And so in Maine, over 25% of Maine's high school students identify as LGBTQ+. And that data comes from the Maine Integrated Youth Health Survey, which is allocated by the Maine CDC every other year to all of Maine's high schools and middle schools. And so that's a lot of youth, right? And that's a lot of people in our communities, in our schools, in our towns. And unfortunately, we know through that survey and that data as well, that a lot of LGBTQ+ youth feel as though they don't matter to their community. They have less connections in school and out of school, unfortunately face a lot more adverse outcomes, such as like, you know, bullying and harassment, both in school and in their communities. And so those things are definitely very true. And in the kind of conversations I have with youth, I think a lot of folks feel a bit maybe like alienated or not connected. But also, I think there are a lot of really simple like protective factors that, you know, adults and individuals in their schools and communities can do. Just like having a GSA in the school, that goes a long way. Like research shows how much that goes in creating and kind of signaling that there's like an affirming space and community. But also many of the youth I talk to really, really love having that space to connect with their peers, to have an adult, to know that there's like a teacher in their school who's really there for them, who gets them. Any also teacher or individual who has like, you know, a pride flag up, everyone's like, oh, I love this coffee shop in my town because they have a pride flag. So they must really like, you know, have queer people there. And so the small things like that really like can seem not like a big deal to people maybe who are older, but for kids, I think those like signals and those ways to connect and those spaces to connect are really, really important and really special. Both the research shows that, but also just like by talking to the kids that I get to spend time with, like having like a pride flag up in your classroom, having a GSA, having like a specific like LGBTQ plus club in your after school program, all of those things are really important. And I think provide that connection and safety space for youth to be able to like be their full selves, find other people who they can connect with like TV shows and drawings and art, and also just like identity exploration and connection. And so I think like the more spaces that can exist for that are really like needed, and also like they go over really well and go a long way to provide connection for youth.
Yeah. And just for any listeners who don't know what GSA is, could you maybe elaborate what GSA stands for?
Yes, yes. I know there's so many acronyms in like the world of like youth and programming especially, but GSA is a Gender and Sexuality Alliance. There's also maybe a GSTA, which is Gay, Straight, Trans Alliance. And these started actually like back in like maybe like the 80s, I think, is when like they were first being implemented into schools. But they're an after-school program. They are allowed to exist via Title IX. And so every school is legally allowed and supposed to be able to have these programs if the teachers have availability and the capacity to do so. And these are spaces for queer youth and allies to just like connect with each other. Often it's just a social space. Sometimes it can be a space to kind of like learn about LGBTQ plus history, do some advocacy within your school if you'd like, or it could just be a place to hang out and kind of feel connected within your school. And as a part of OutMaine, some of our programs exist within these GSTAs. And so I kind of mentioned earlier, we have kind of four different prongs, right? We work with youth programs, we work with schools, we work with parents and families, and we work within the communities. With our work in schools and youth, some of that is directly in GSTAs. So if you have a GSTA or school, OutMaine is so happy to come in, talk about our programs, lead an activity, do a training, help host a regional event. So we'd like to do regional GSTAs to kind of bring together schools from different areas all together. If your school does not have a GSTA, we can also help you start one. So if any of that is of interest to you, definitely reach out to me, the youth engagement coordinator, or we have a school engagement coordinator who'd be happy to do that. And so, yeah, that's a GSTA or GSA.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And just kind of expanding on that, I think, like you were mentioning, just like the youth and kind of having that visibility in especially like schools and whatnot. And I'm wondering, because you said like, legally, like schools are allowed, like under Title IX, to have these programs. Have you felt like been some pushback that you've noticed in Maine with these sort of creating these spaces in schools?
Yeah. So a lot of schools have really great GSAs and have had for a long time, but I've also seen the struggle for some teachers to kind of get the kind of support from their administrators or from their school boards. Maybe there's parents pushback. And I think there can be obstacles that are created with like, maybe like not having like funding allocated, or maybe not having like time in the schedule, or also for teachers, it could be, I think, vulnerable sometimes depending on your district to kind of put yourself out there as the adult, especially if you're a queer teacher. Sometimes it can feel really hard to be that person leading the GSA, because sometimes they might put like a target on your back. I also see sometimes students, even if they have a GSA at their school, not being able to tell their parents what program that they want to do for the after school. So there's kind of like that difficulty there of like, they might have it, but also students are scared to kind of like go to it because of fear of like either outing themselves to their family or to their peers. And so kind of like the balance there, a lot of schools face of wanting GSAs to be super public and available, but also wanting to protect maybe safety and, you know, youth who attend it. And so there's definitely like a balance depending on which school you're in, which district you're in, how supportive maybe your administrators are and your school board, and also just like the kind of political context in your town. But yeah, Maine does luckily have a lot of really great, actually, like state policies supporting, you know, both like GSAs, that's a federal policy, but also with the Maine state policy regarding, we have really great like trans student policies and regarding letting, you know, all students like, you know, use bathrooms and use locker rooms, use the names, et cetera, that match like their identity, their gender, and they are legally protected to do so. And teachers are all legally required to kind of follow these protocols. And so I think like, it is nice to know that although there's all of this kind of like political commentary in the like national level, at the Maine state level, we do currently have really great protective policies for queer students. And I don't think everyone necessarily knows that. So I think sometimes it's great to kind of know that Maine has good state policy. It's very protective, very safe. And there you can find more information like on like the Maine Human Rights Commission. They have really clear kind of explanations there. On the Maine DOE, the Department of Education, also has an LGBTQ plus students page also. That's very helpful in kind of like laying out all of this in a bit more detail.
It's great to know, you know, with a larger political discourse that we're hearing in the country, but to know what protections students have here in Maine, especially for trans rights and creating safe spaces. And I was wondering if there was, because obviously, although Maine has pretty good protections, not everyone is going to feel safe. So I'm just wondering, what are kind of the steps or goals or even negotiations a school might be able to have to make resources accessible to students, but also not by outing students and still cultivating a safe space? Like what might be some tactics a school could use?
Yeah. And so one thing I always kind of urge too is for these kinds of conversations and these kinds of like materials to be provided like everywhere, not just for queer kids, because when we're thinking about, you know, gender and we're thinking about like identity, everyone has like a gender identity. Everyone has a way to exist in the world and they want to be in the world. And I think it's really important for like all youth and all individuals really to have like opportunities to explore this in safe ways, have resources, have safe adults to talk to about like any and all of this. And so my recommendation is always for like, you know, like all classrooms to have like representation in like their curriculum, have it like in their posters, have like visual representations of all different types of like identities, of genders, of ways families can be made up. And so by doing that, you aren't outing specific kids. You also are, you know, using pronouns or asking about pronouns in like all of your classes and asking it of like all of your staff and faculty and students. So you're not also just like, you know, looking at kids who you think might be a part of the LGBTQ plus community, because again, right, you can never tell if someone is or not. And those are kind of like these assumptions people hold. And so I think just making these kinds of conversations and these kinds of practices like available and as ubiquitous as possible in your school space. So right, asking and sharing your pronouns in all of your spaces, having resources available, whether that's like in your curriculum, in your, you know, visual spaces, in your conversations, in kind of all of those ways, I think helps make it show that one, like the whole school community is really safe and affirming. And also two, it doesn't really risk outing specific individuals because it's really just available to everyone at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, this conversation is just making me reflect back to when I was a kid going up through the Maine public school systems and how much I feel like it has changed in the past couple of years. So I'm wondering if maybe you can speak to some newer trends you've seen or even within the 4 years you've been out Maine, how maybe things have evolved.
Yeah. Well, I think definitely echoing like the experience, it seems like a lot of youth I know, especially queer youth, are having in middle school and high school feels like so far away from like experience like I had. And I was in I grew up in Massachusetts, so it was a different public system but still nearby. And I think like it feels really cool and exciting to see how many youth at young ages are able to like know who they are and express it and share it and like find community in it. And I think I'm like always so impressed by like the knowledge and that youth have. So we have like, as a part of our programs, we have online programs and in-person programs. And so in our online programs, we have like a younger age group program called Fruit Loops, which is like 9 to 13 year olds. And those kids impress me like every single week, like one, how like caring and kind they are to each other, but also how knowledgeable they are about like different terminology, about identity, about history, about activism. And so I think like one thing I've noticed is like younger kids have more resources, I think, available, maybe because of online, maybe because of spaces like out Maine where they're able to meet, connect with like kids over shared identity, over shared interests. But they're so excited, but also knowledgeable about like queer history, about like current, like, you know, TV shows, films, books, and they're so excited to share and talk about it with each other, which I think is really exciting that they have those spaces, but also have the sense of self and are able to kind of like develop it and express it at like younger ages than like I was and my peers, I think, were.
Within the queer experience, there's always this sort of, I feel like, push and pull with like discovering who you are. And I think there's sometimes misconceptions of sharing the different ideas, how that can kind of almost convince somebody to change in a way. And so, and I wonder kind of if you have any thoughts of maybe a reframe of that for people who might be thinking that there's a lot more queer youth and is that strange?
Right. No, that's a great comment, because that's kind of like when you're thinking about like sometimes in our training. So we do like trainings for school providers, educators, after school programs, healthcare providers, etc. And I think this question kind of comes up very often, like, oh, but there seems to be more queer kids now than when I was a kid. And so the answer always is like, there have always been queer kids and queer people, and they have always, we have always existed and always will exist. It's always I think what we're seeing now is that there is an increased sense of safety and belonging. And I think ability because of that to come out at earlier ages. I think that there are more visible queer people like in the media and in like higher positions of power in the world that you're able to be like, oh, like this is, you can see at a younger age, like this is someone I can relate to, or maybe this is a thing that's like okay to share and okay to exist as. Whereas I think like when folks were younger, there wasn't as much of that. Also, like things weren't as legal. Like, you know, back in like the 70s, like you couldn't wear pants and, you know, shirts as like as a woman, and like all of those kinds of like legal impositions that kind of like cause people to fear for their safety in their life, which obviously there is still that right now. But I think that we're in a moment where there's more queer people in the mainstream, there's more conversations about it, and there's in general more accepting community spaces, family, schools that kind of like allow kids to feel safe coming out. And also I think in are able to see versions of themselves that they could exist in at younger ages that weren't necessarily available to a lot of us before that.
You are tuned in to WERU Community Radio Station, and you are listening to We Are Queer. I'm your host, Olivia Peruk, and you are listening to a conversation I'm having with Maggie Hirschland, who is the Youth Engagement Coordinator at OutMaine. Currently, we are discussing how visible representation can make the youth feel comfortable coming out sooner than they may have before.
Right, so it's less about there's more queer youth now. It's just that there's comfortability and safety that allows people to express who they really are. And like I always say, there was always gay and LGBTQ people. It's just now.
Right.
Times have changed, thankfully.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And I did wonder, because just kind of pivoting here, reading about youth and queer youth especially, it seems like mm-hmm. OutMaine, there's a lot of focus on mental health aspects. So I really wanted to kind of dive into that, because I think mental health and mental well-being for young people is definitely, I think, a concern nationwide and in the state of Maine. And it seems like LGBTQ youth tend to also have, I don't know if there's a higher or what the stats are. So I just want to dive into that to kind of bring that to light as well.
Yeah. And so OutMaine, like a lot of our goal is to, you know, try to like have spaces to celebrate and like have positive experience for youth. But also I think we really try to support the mental health of the youth we work with. We do have like a mental health coordinator specifically on staff also to help inform all of our programming. But you are right that LGBTQ plus youth in the country and also in Maine, based off that similar CDC data that I was mentioning earlier, like that Maine Integrated Youth Health Survey, we do see that LGBTQ plus youth, particularly trans youth, do suffer more from adverse mental health outcomes and more suicidality as well in particular. And we do see that this is informed by a lot of different factors, right? It's informed by maybe more bullying and harassment in school and at home. There was a recent Trevor Project, which is a nationwide kind of like research database resource for all, and they do a bunch of great surveys and research. And so one of the recent ones showed too that the national political landscape, like over 9 in 10 youth, LGBTQ plus youth, are negatively affected in their mental health by the discourse going on. So we kind of see that there is an increased risk for poor mental health for queer youth. And so I think we really want to try to provide more spaces for youth to be able to talk about that and also be affirmed and also like find ways and explore ways to feel good and feel connected, feel seen, have a sense of belonging. I think that developing a sense of belonging and developing a sense of community and knowing that like you matter, those are really big protective factors. And so that's really where I try to center like all of our youth programming in that. And again, like we do that through like our online programs. We're right now doing like a yoga program in partnership with Sea Change Yoga, where we're trying to, you know, do that mind-body connection. We have a lot of like drop-ins. We have mental health kind of specific drop-ins and support. And then, yeah, so kind of finding all of those ways that we can provide those connections, I think is really important. And one big protective factor is like having like one adult in a youth's life that knows like that, you know, they care for them, that they're there for them, that they matter. And also I'm pretty sure the statistic from Trevor Project is from Trevor Project as well, but it's like queer youth who have their identity and pronouns used by adults in their life attempt suicide at 50% less the rate than those who do not. And so that's like, again, one, as I said, relatively simple, small things to try and really work on and do that can really support youth feeling like they are seen, that they matter, and that they're understood. So definitely a big focus for us.
Yeah, that's great to know, I think, for people who maybe are older or who aren't as aware of this statistic. I think it's important to mention. And I'm wondering if there's any school districts or maybe parents who are wondering if there's any resources or guides that people could turn to if they are concerned for a youth.
Yeah, I think that the Trevor Project is a really, really great resource. So they have like a hotline in particular if like you want to call and talk to someone, but they also just have so many great guides and resources. They have guides and resources for youth. They have guides and resources for parents, for teachers. GLSEN, G-L-S-E-N. They also have a lot of really great resources on their website about a more school specific, but like how schools can support youth that they're working with and parents and families as well. GLAAD, G-L-A-A-D is also a great resource. That these are all like national resources, but have really great easy guides, easy kind of contact, and start applying to like your school or your, you know, classroom, or also at home with your kids as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Hopefully those are some good guides for people.
One more thing I mentioned briefly, but not like in more depth, but we also, in a part of our parent and family programs, we do have once a month an online kind of support space online for parents. And so this is a great space if like you want to come and like ask questions, if you want to get resources. We have that online every single month on Zoom. And we also go around and try to like every other few months to have different in-person opportunities for parents as well. And so that is a nice space for parents, I think, sometimes really to be able to share with each other kind of like maybe some challenges or maybe some questions they have, and being able to learn from each other as well as our mental health coordinator about how to best support their youth. So that's a good other opportunity. It doesn't happen like immediately, but it's once a month.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. And now I feel like kind of pivoting, because obviously it was a little heavier topic. I really loved it because there are some also really cool activities and events that OutMaine puts on. And I'm really curious about the Rainbow Ball and what that might look like.
Yeah. So the Rainbow Ball is like my favorite event that we do for work, but also like maybe one of my favorite events I've been able to attend like all time. It happens every spring, and it is a weekend where over 150 queer youth from all over the state come together for a weekend of workshops, talent show, and a queer prom. And it is like the most beautiful, magical weekend you could imagine. We have a free boutique that is there. So we get dresses, you know, pantsuits, dress shirts, etc., all donated to us. And we have a whole cabin that's just full of free clothing. It has clothing, it has makeup, it has shoes, it has like all sorts of fun stuff. And kids can kind of go in and try things on. They can take things for that night. They can take things for home. And it is like really special, like one of my favorite components, because I just love going in there throughout the weekend and kind of seeing what everyone's trying on and how excited all the kids are. But that weekend in general is just really, really special. And it happens every either very end of April or very beginning of May. And it is at a camp in Mid Coast, Maine, and it's open to all queer youth again across the state. And we have on Friday a talent show that is really fun and really special. And then on Saturday, we have a whole day full of workshops. And these workshops, we bring in different organizations and individuals who work at all different organizations. So it's super fun. And we have like, you know, art workshops, we have ropes, we have like learning about astrology, we have learning about like LGBTQ plus history, we have like advocacy. And it's like kind of like choose your own adventure of like what kind of workshops you want to do for the day. And then that night we have the prom, which is a dance. And we've had a student DJ it the past few years. So it's like all student influenced. We decorate it, and it's just really special and really fun. And so if you are interested in kind of signing up for that, all of our programs also have scholarships available. So it's pay what you can, and you can also pay it forward. And so I encourage everyone to check this out, because it is a really special weekend. And I'm pretty sure registrations go live either in beginning of January or end of January. And so definitely keep an eye out for that, because it's really special to get to go to, and it's for 8th grade to 12th grade. So you have a lot of time to come.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, you're kind of saying it's a special weekend, and I know obviously special can be hard to quantify sometimes, but I'm just wondering like what a queer prom might mean to the youth, or what you've noticed for youth that attend.
Yeah. I think what I have seen and noticed is like youth who I think at the beginning of the weekend, and I've seen maybe like in their school spaces, who are maybe quieter, maybe shy, or maybe not as like engaged in the activities during the prom and during that weekend, are out of their shell. Like they're like super happy, they're exuberant, they're like dancing, have the biggest smiles that you've like ever seen. And also I think wearing clothes that maybe it's like the first time they're able to wear these kinds of clothes, or wear clothes that feel like match, you know, their expression, how they want to exist in the world. And so you see a lot of like nervousness at the beginning that turns into like really big joy and like excitement. And you can kind of just see that in the energy, but also by talking to them, I think so many youth at the end of the weekend do get very sad, which is always hard to see, but they're like, I just wish like everywhere I go was like this. And the kind of like the comments of like, this is just like a space where I feel like I'm able to be myself, where I find people who are also like me. I didn't know that there were other people like me is like a very common kind of quote I hear from that. And a very common of like, is this really like how it can be, is like the like kind of question and excitement. And I think the kind of like awe in the beginning, but then turning into like becoming best friends with each other that they just met you know, after a day or two. And then those friendships continue. Like, I have known youth now for 4 years, and a lot of them, like, met people at Rainbow Ball that they're still friends with to this day, which is really special. So I think there's, like, friendship that comes from it. There's developing a sense of self that comes from it. Exploration of kind of, like, identity and gender and how to exist in, like, different spaces. And also, I will say, like, we have cabin volunteers and chaperones and adults who are at the space. I think it does the same thing for the adults there. I think so many of us, like, didn't have this experience when we were younger. So this, like, you get to dress up also and, like, have this dance and prom version that you didn't really have when you were younger. And also, like, a seeing yourself in the younger kids that happens, which is really cool. So just the space to kind of exist as you want to be, maybe for the first time for a lot of, especially the younger kids.
Yeah, that sounds, that does seem really special for sure. And it seems like that not only can obviously the fee or pay what you can, but there also seems to be donors that are organizations or other stuff that if you own a business and feel really called, you can also donate to the Rainbow Ball, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So you can, if you are do anything regarding to, like, clothes or accessories, we would love all those donations. And then also, like, sponsorships and stuff too. You can always, like, I think we have opportunities to donate to kind of, like, a sponsor, a kid, be able to go to Rainbow Ball. This is also actually connected. We have, like, an adult version of this called the Rainbow Gala that we just started last year. So it's in our second iteration this year. This happens in mid-February. And that is all of the funds for that kind of, like, go towards raising money for our programs such as Rainbow Ball. And so there's also a lot of opportunities for business to sponsor that event. And then all the funds, you know, go to our youth programs such as Rainbow Ball. So that's another opportunity if you're looking to kind of get involved in that way. Or if you'd like to attend or support any of our programs, you know, for leading a workshop or kind of like any of that, we're always happy to have new faces and new organizations in our workshops at Rainbow Ball or in any of our online or summer programs as well.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. Well, I guess kind of we're getting close to the end here. So it goes by fast, 30 minutes. So if you have any kind of last points or comments that you wanted to make, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on to talk about OutMaine. I think I feel really lucky for being able to, you know, work directly with the youth, but also work with so many really caring and special adults and educators and parents who are really trying to kind of make spaces safer for all and, like, more welcoming, inclusive. And I think I've talked a lot about our youth programs, but I do want to just, like, in the last, you know, minute or two, mention that we do so many trainings and partnerships and collaborations with schools, with other organizations, with healthcare providers and businesses. Anyone who wants a training, any business or organization, we will love to do a training and kind of support you in that journey. We also are offering these different, like, cohort models for schools. So if you're kind of wanting a more intensive, like, opportunity to kind of do some culture change, we have that opportunity as well to kind of work with us in a more in-depth, like, month, multiple months in a row type of a program. And we always love to be able to kind of, like, support in any way that you all need. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out. No matter what role you exist in the state, we're here.
Thank you to today's guest, Maggie Hirschland, who showed us the possibilities and resources for the queer youth in Maine. Thank you also to Juniper Ginger, a local artist in Maine who created our theme music. And that is all for We Are Queer. My name is Olivia Pruk, and we'll be back next month. We Are Queer happens every second Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. and can later be streamed on the web or WERU app. If you have feedback for the show or want to get in touch, email info@weru.org with WERQ in the subject line. Thank you for being with us, and remember to stay curious and stay kind. Stay tuned for more public affairs broadcasting.